Well, I'll speak a little loud because the sound is down. Charging me here. Charging me here. Charging me here. Okay, fix it. Repair, Carol. Take it. Take it and get it going. Change battery. So, Lord Balaram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Krishna is known as Sevya Bhagavan, or the Lord who is being served. And Balaram is known as the one who is... Can it just change the batteries in there and stop tapping? I mean, that's not going to do it. It's just going to get me... Ah. I have to detach. So Lord Balaram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Lord Balaram is known as the first servant because he is always serving Krishna in so many ways. It is said in the different books describe things about Balaram. The Krishna book also gives us many pastimes of Balaram. But in the Krishna book we find that Balaram is usually in support of Krishna. It's like... Does the other mic work? It doesn't. It means the system is flat. Yeah, it's not charged. Okay. Professor.
So, then Balaram is the first servant, Sevya Bhagavan. The Chaitanya Charitamrita is describing how Lord Balaram is becoming everything that is required for Krishna's comfort. He becomes his bed. We also know that Lord Vishnu is lying on the bed of Ananta Sesh. And in the same way, all the paraphernalia used by the Lord are Balaram. And that's one reason why kartals are never placed on the ground, because the kartals are also Balaram. And the mardanga is Balaram. The harmonium is Balaram. All these things, all the utensils used for the glorification and the service of the Lord, Balaram personally becomes these things. When Lord Chaitanya is in Navadvip, then it is Ananta Sesh who becomes his Brahmin thread. So as the Lord is walking around like a proud Brahmana in Navadvip, oh yes, then Ananta Sesh is on his chest like a Brahmin thread. In this way, Balaram manifests himself in many ways to serve the Lord. It is said that there are three Purusha avatars. Hey, bachalo, chup, chup, chup. Chup, chup. Yeah. Okay, that's your job. I'm coming there. Just. He's trying to distract me. That's what he's doing. Yes, the three Purusha avatars. That's what you want to know. It's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. In the Adi Lila, we find a description of Lord Nityananda Balaram. And there we find... Can you keep the kids? That's your job. Kids quiet. So there it is described that Lord Balaram is becoming... He is becoming Lord Mahavishnu. He is becoming Garbhodaksaya Vishnu. He is becoming Sirudaksaya Vishnu. In this way, he is becoming all these personalities to serve the Lord at each stage of the creation. And each wherever the Lord goes, Balaram goes there to prepare. Just like when before Krishna appears in the womb of Devaki, Balaram first goes there to prepare everything, so that everything is ready for Krishna to appear. So Balaram went first. Then he moved on and got transferred to the womb of Rohini. Right? But basically, wherever Krishna goes, Balaram provides all the arrangements. Just like Balaram is providing for the facility, also for Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, because Balaram becomes Vrindavan. So, in this way, in any possible way, Balaram is serving Krishna. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat, because Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur is the disciple of Nityananda, he dedicates the whole beginning to the glorification of Balaram. And he just a lot of information about the glories of Balaram. And one of the things he says is that the mouth of Ananta Ses is like the jewel case for the glorification of Krishna. So in other words, if one wants to begin to glorify Krishna, one should pray to Ananta Dev. So I'm doing that right now, because with all the distraction, it was a little difficult to focus my mind. Somehow or other, when we speak about Krishna, it's not just that we are repeating some lesson that we have quickly sort of memorized and make a note. Rather, we just meditate, we think about Lord Balaram. The other day in Madhuvan, we had a quick darshan of Lord Balaram, who was there in a blackish form. Here he is in a golden form. So these things are going on. We have white Krishnas and black Balarams everywhere. That chalega, that will be fine. Of course, we know that in Madhuvan, there's a pastime where Krishna turned black because he was deeply meditating on Krishna when Balaram turned black, when he was deeply meditating on Krishna. So we also are here to meditate. We're not here to hear some stories. This is a place where Balaram stayed in Vrindavan. It is said that this is a place where Balaram also, when he came back to Vrindavan, to pacify the residents of Vrindavan, who were... because when once a Krura comes to Vrindavan, the misery begins, you know. It's all over. Akrura, he comes, he takes Krishna away, and from that moment on, the entire forest of Vrindavan begins to dry up. The cowherd boys are falling unconscious in the forest. Subal says, I'm also leaving Vrindavan. If Krishna's not here, then how can I stay here? So in this way, everyone was experiencing the greatest separation after Akrura left. So Krishna tried in various ways. He tried to send messengers. It is said when Krishna was living in Dwarka, then daily many messengers would be sent from Vrindavan by Nanda Maharaj on horses to go to Dwarka. And daily, many messengers were sent from Dwarka so that they would always get the latest news. And in this way, there was a constant stream of messengers going up and down, but that didn't really help at all. That didn't resolve the issue. So when Uddhava was sent, all right, that brought a little relief because Uddhava very much resembled Krishna, but still it was not good enough. Then Balaram came, and Balaram came, and it said Balaram also performed Ras Lila pastimes. Balaram stayed for a number of months, but Balaram had his own gopis. Not meeting with, or not performing pastimes with Krishna's gopis, but with his own gopis. So this area is the place where Balaram performed these activities. We look at Balaram as the carrier of the plow, right? And it is said that Balaram plows the field. The plowing of the field means to prepare the field. And when we prepare the field, then after one can sow seeds and so on. So Balaram, he prepares the field by engaging us in devotional service. And it is through that service that we become, by assisting Balaram in service, we are becoming ready to receive transcendental knowledge. Krishna is the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita, and Krishna is the giver of transcendental knowledge. So then we get transcendental knowledge. But we cannot just take the Gita without first changing our life. See, it's like me, I got the Gita from someone, and then I was still smoking cigarettes. So I was smoking and reading the Gita, throwing ashes on the pages, blowing rings through rings and saying, yes, yes, I know all this. I used to say, but of course that's rubbish, you know, because one has to first live the life of a servant before one can understand the Gita. There is a category of philosophers who are known as armchair philosophers, and they're very comfortable and speaking about very high matters and so on, but they're not living it. They're not living it. So what is the point if one is not living according to these kind of descriptions and instructions? That makes no sense. So Balaram is showing us by example how to serve Krishna in every possible way. He serves Krishna as a menial servant by providing his basic needs, but he's also serving Krishna as the one in his mission. Krishna, when he comes to the material world, Krishna has a mission. Krishna is not just coming to the material world to perform pleasure pastimes. Of course, he's performing pleasure pastimes, but Krishna comes to the material world because he's concerned. He feels separation from the living entities. Of course, Krishna is in the spiritual world, and the majority of the living beings are in the spiritual world. It is said that the material world is known as the Ekapat Vibhuti, or that means as one quarters, and the spiritual world is three quarters. Then it is said that 90% of the living beings are in the Tripat Vibhuti, that is in the spiritual realm, and only 10% are here, somehow or other. So we are in the minority, right? There's a few stubborn, conditioned souls left over, lost in the woods, somehow or other here in the material world, and, trying to squeeze some material enjoyment out of it, and good luck to all of you. I wish you a lot of success. So far, all generations before you have miserably failed. But, you can give it a shot if you really want to. Why not? You know, you're young and ready for action, ready to enjoy. Yeah, it's But if we just turn spiritual life into a life which is all dry and there's no enjoyment at all, then we go like, well, you know, everyone likes to enjoy. So enjoy. Enjoy as much as you like. We are not the movement that is against enjoyment. No worries. It's okay. We are all for it, right? But for enjoyment, you just came at the right moment, yeah? But we are the movement where we don't enjoy through sinful activities. That is the point. Sinful activities, no. And of course, the modern world, they don't know how to enjoy. You know, it's like, it's a birthday, right? Bring out the bottles. Where are the bottles, right? Even in India, you know, now, I mean, in the duty-free, the Indians are buying very, very well, you know. I see them on the airports, big bags with many bottles. Well, what can we say? It's now the way you celebrate a party. Bring out a bottle. But so that is not understanding how to enjoy. That is all. So the culture of enjoyment is very much within this movement. How to eat nicely, how to drink nicely, how to have nice festivals, how to dress nicely. I mean, you read about the residents of Vrindavan, and they dress really nicely, and then they start throwing yogurt around and butter on each other's clothes. Nice clothes, no problem. They're not poor. They have clothes enough. They have lots of nice clothes, so no one is like too worried when there's a little yogurt flying around. These things are, so there is enjoyment, a lot of enjoyment. And that is really what we are trying to do. We're trying to experience some positive enjoyment. We don't come here to perform some austerity, although there is a little bit austerity. I mean, have you heard that camels are known as the ship of the desert? Have you heard? Camels are known as the ship of the desert. Because, you know, you can get seasick. You can get seasick on a camel, right? I mean, the way it's rocking. And, you know, well, I think I'm going to name our bus the New Jaladutta, you know? We already had Sangeeta getting seasick yesterday, right? And there might be more to follow because, I mean, today it was extremely bad weather out there on the ocean, right? As we came in, and we still got to go back with a full stomach. Right? So, what can I say? Some austerity is there in the material world. But then again, that we'll gladly take, and we also see that increases the value of what we're experiencing. Do you smell it? Smell. You smell it? This is called air. You know, there are no chimneys here, no factories here, no nuclear power plants here. We are just, there's a wind blowing and it's fresh air. We put out the fire. So, in this way, we can appreciate, actually, that the way Krishna arranged it, the way Krishna arranged life is very nice. We are meant to live in villages. I have one disciple who got a PhD and after the PhD said, actually, I like cooking. And I said, I said, what you get a PhD for? Anyway, what to do? We're living in such an artificial world, so far removed from nature. So, and then we are here in such a simple place. And of course, you know, if you would live here It can be austere in the rainy season when it's all muddy. I used to live on the Goshala land in what is now the VIHE. Yeah. And they would lock the Goshala at night, so there, you couldn't go into the Goshala and use a bathroom. There was no bathroom. The field was the bathroom. Yeah. And there was no running water. It was a well, and you had to throw the bucket down. Anyway, it was good for me. There's some exercise, you know, pulling buckets of water, because, of course, I had to pull the buckets of water. that you can understand. Anyway, so simple living has its austerity, but it is also very nice, because that kind of austerity naturally helps us towards sense control. Whereas, you know, you try and live in a big city with all the artificial comforts of life and all the varieties and all the flavors and all the goodies and everything, and it's like goody good, and then, you know, what you're gonna do, it's not so easy to control the senses, if you know what I mean. You know, there's like the senses are very strong. So this village life is naturally giving us strength. Balaram is the giver of spiritual strength, and Balaram with his plow is not only symbolically indicating the plowing the heart, but is also Krishi Goraksha. Krishi Goraksha showing the life of tilling the fields and protecting the cows. Simple living. That is nice. And of course, you know, some people live on farms and they go from farm to farm, you know, that also happens. It's like some people live on a farm in Australia and then they go in a tin can to fly to the other world to come to, and finally, after a long time, they come to where? To farm life. But it's not an ordinary farm. It's transcendental. Because this, here we're dealing not with ordinary dust. You know, one thing you can say about farms is they're dusty places. I mean, really dusty places. Vrindavan dust is very fine, right? Very fine. And now it's getting less and less available because it goes under the concrete, under the roads. But the Parikram path used to be very fine, soft sand. Right? Very nice. You can still find it if you go the other way in Vrindavan, you know, like towards Sunrock. There you have lots of soft sand. Fine. So, but this dust goes everywhere. And in Vrindavan, you always have to clean. I know all about it. For years I was responsible for cleaning the temple, and it's amazing how quickly it gets dirty again. How everything gets dirty in Vrindavan. Like my cloth, it's nice for the whole year, then I come to Vrindavan, and then it's within 2 weeks it gets more spoiled than in a whole year. It's amazing about how it goes. So simple living also means we live with dust, we live with all these things, whereas, you know, we live with insects, we live with all these things, whereas in a, you know, in a city these things are not there. Right? So it is very nice that we can we live comfortable in our cities, heat and cold, you don't worry about, too hot, turn on air conditioner, too cold, turn up the heater a little bit, raining outside, no problem, because the car is in the garage connected to the house, so you never have to go out into the weather, you step straight into your car and just drive out, so no drop of rain will fall upon you. In this way, we live very comfortably in our cities, and the idea that your hands would get dirty, right? You see these farmers and you look at their hands, they have black grooves in their hands. Ooh, terrible, right? Oh gosh. And cows, you know, it sounds very romantic, cow protection. But did you ever milk a cow, you know? First of all, to get the milk out of that cow, it's an art, you know? Yeah. There's no tap, you know? You don't just open up the tap. Open the tap, it doesn't stream out like that. Oh, you have to sort of pull and this, that, try and get the milk out. And meanwhile, that cow immediately knows that you're not expert. Immediately. And that cow will immediately kick, you know. And you gotta be careful. I've seen people flying. Serious. So, village life has its austerities, absolutely. And city life has its comforts. And that is why the whole world is moving into the cities. In the year 2000, 35% of the people of the entire world population were living in the cities. Now it is 60%. In 18 years, it went from 35% to 60% in the entire world. Statistics. Interesting, isn't it? I mean, it shows a trend. It shows how the world is all moving to the city. And with it, you know, we're losing touch. And we're making our spiritual life more difficult. And we all work in jobs with computers and in offices and so on. And so many hours. Huh? So many hours a day. So, Lord Balaram also represents, along with Krishna, a lifestyle which is much more basic. And one day the world will have to return to the villages. That day will have to come. Yeah? I mean, sooner or later, we'll be forced to return to our villages and to live a more simple lifestyle. So that is... And one may say, that's not spiritual. It is not spiritual, but it does support spiritual life. Yeah. Some people might think that they have a spiritual difficulty, living in the cities. They may think, oh, it's so difficult to chant, it's so difficult to do all these things. I mean, I find it very, very hard. You know, have a job, have all these things. I find it so hard. Yeah, because you live a wrong life. You would live the village life, it would be much easier. See, in the village, the fields are there, and people work, but not all the time. Right? Not all the time. So, you know, it's not that every... look around you. You see a lot of people working on the fields right now? It's not like, you know, they're not so busy. And of course, at the time of planting, at the time of plowing, there's work to do. At the time of the harvest, you know, everybody's got to work, right? Really hard for a little while. But then again, you know, and there's time. You come in a village and people ask you questions, you know, like, oh, how are you? Where are you from? Who is your father, your mother, your auntie, your uncle, and your this and your dad? And like, you know, are you, yes. And they keep on talking to you, and it's like, you know, we're looking at a watch, you know. I mean, like, look, you know, we got no time, you know. Hey, you know, I mean, get to the point, we got no time. I mean, like, you know, we got to go. It's like, you know, what are we doing here? Like, you know, it's like... I also live with a watch because I have a hectic life. I'm not living in the country. I'm not living with the cows. I'm not living on the fields. But once I lived very simple here in Vrindavan, and it was actually very nice. Taking drinking water from one well, taking bathing water from another well, simply close to the cows, eating things directly from the earth. This is the life. You know, Lokanath Maharaj grew up in the village, and you can see him, he's fit. You know, he stayed fit long. Right? I'm already breaking to pieces. I'm much younger, but I'm breaking to pieces because I just drank milk from bottles, you know, not from cows. I was shocked. When I was 10, I went for the first time in my life to a farm, and I saw where the milk came from. Oh my God. And then all these things coming out of the back of the cow at the same time. I said, oh my God, what if some drops of that fall into my milk? I tell you, I didn't drink milk for a week. It's just like, oh my God. Then when I came home, milk was again in bottles. Okay, that was all right. Milk straight from that cow. Phew, it was shocking. So, why am I speaking about this? Because this artificial lifestyle that we have created is so unfavorable for spiritual life. Of course, spiritual life can be practiced anywhere. It doesn't matter. Yukta Vairagya. You can engage anything in the service of Krishna. You can engage a computer in the service of Krishna, but you still get square eyes. You can, I've given the example of a car, and how when I drive a car, that in the beginning I'm still a human being. But after a while, I'm becoming part of that car. We become one. And then I am just like, racing across that road. And then if some idiot comes in front of me, then I want a button, a zap button. Right? I want a flamethrower. I want to just burn him to ashes, destroy him. So, because I'm driving a machine, which is basically an Ugra machine, it's a product of Ugra karma, of aggressive. Ugra means angry. It means aggressive. So, we have a culture, this mechanistic culture, is Ugra, it is aggressive. What we eat is Ugra, with all the chemicals on it, this, that. It's Ugra, everything is Ugra. And the clothes are Ugra, it's like the chemicals, the drinks you drink. All the chemicals go through, right? Think about it, This crazy lifestyle, and we offer it to Krishna. Krishna also goes, Krishna gets the hiccups. Is that what you're offering to me? So this whole artificial life, it's not nourishing us, not physically nourishing us, not mentally nourishing us, and not bringing us to the mode of goodness. It just brings us to passion and ignorance, and life is faster and faster. I was on the plane, and there was a businessman next to me as I came now to Vrindavan, and he kept on talking and talking and talking and talking, but he was intelligent, was a nice man. And he was telling me, he said that life changed when the fax machine came in. He said it completely changed. I said, the fax machine? The internet maybe, but the fax machine? He said, no, the fax machine. That was the big change. He said, because before that, people, they would do business on the phone. And they put in an order, or they check, right? If you can supply certain goods. And then you would send them in the mail, an offer, right, with all the details. And then a few days later, they would give you the order. He said, and when the fax machine came, people called you within like a minute. You would send them all the information, and you get the order straight away. Huh? And everything started to move very fast. And suddenly you had to like run, you know. But before, business was slow and sleepy, and, you know, nice. Like every few days, something moved. Suddenly everything started to move very fast. Faster and faster. Faster orders. Fast deliveries. So it was interesting how he described how the pace of life was becoming faster because of the fax machine. Because we all talk about how the pace of life has become so fast. But he illustrated it, like how it worked. I thought it was interesting. So Krishna and Balaram are showing us the lifestyle of Vrindavan. And that lifestyle of Vrindavan is really the perfect model for the world. Prabhupada wanted Gita Nagaris, little villages based on the Gita, not one. In 1959, Prabhupada wrote a brochure about Gita Nagaris. He made one Gita Nagari in America, but actually had the idea that there would be many Gita Nagaris, many villages based on the philosophy of the Gita and with a simple lifestyle. Prabhupada made various communities around the world, New Vrindavan. He was very happy about the milk from the black cow, Kaliya. In this way, Prabhupada had a vision of gradually creating communities that would go back to a more rural, traditional way of life. But then, really, farming, well, yeah, okay. And instead, some devotees lived on the farm and then drove away and sold paintings and would come back at night, have a comfortable life. And when the internet came, you don't even have to do that. You can work on the internet and you can just live on a farm like a resort. But you don't have to do anything with the land. So these things are going on. So this is how Krishna and Balaram are showing us not only a philosophy, but also showing us a lifestyle. And the more we live that kind of lifestyle, the more everything starts to come together, the more our spiritual life becomes easy, the more it becomes natural. And of course, it's an adjustment, and maybe some of us will say, well, not for me in this life, but maybe for the next generations. The people here, they do fine, they're okay, because they grew up with this. And life goes on, you know. In India, the traffic is very dangerous, and two vehicles were coming from opposite direction at night and gradually getting closer. One of the drivers was nodding off. Oh my God, is it gonna be one of those? Oh, don't worry, they were bullock carts. And when the driver nods off, that's okay. Sometimes the driver goes and lies in the back and he sleeps, because the bullock, he knows where he goes. He's been there hundreds of times to the same market. So they take the busa, the straw, and the driver sleeps in the back, right? The bullocks pull it over to the market. They get to the market. Driver gets to work. He wakes up. The bullocks, they eat, and then they sleep. They work in shifts. Yeah? That's it. And it all works fine. Life goes on. Life goes on well. And real wealth is grains and cows. Nanda Maharaj had 900,000 cows. And Maharaj Vrishabhanu even more. I forgot now, I think, but it was more. It could be up to 2 million cows. Anyway, so you can imagine so many cows, 900,000 cows. And how was it all going on? How were they eating all these cows? I mean, you know, Have you thought of that? You keep some cows, like the goat shelter. I was president in this temple, and oh boy, I was always dreading it when the head of the goat shelter would come. Right? I knew. Oh, now it's going to cost me a fortune. Right? You come to me and you go, oh no, here he is again. Because cows, you know, they eat a lot, huh? And they eat all the time. Right? Never stops. They just eat and eat and eat. And it's just never enough, you know. But if you have fields, no problem. No problem. That can absorb all that. We can graze in the forest. Just send the kids out. See? All these kids sit around. Send them out with the calves. Give them something to do. Right? In this way, everything perfectly arranged. So the life of Krishna is not only the amazing sweet pastimes of Krishna and Balaram, but it is also a model for the actual way to live. And in that actual way, it becomes so much more natural to be Krishna conscious. Then it is very easily done. Okay, that was the eco part of the lecture. It was an eco lecture. And the spiritual part of the lecture is that Balaram in particular is, because he's Adi Guru, he's the original servant and serves Krishna in so many ways, therefore Balaram is the giver of spiritual strength. Spiritual strength is then coming through service. It seems that some people are by nature spiritually strong and some people are by nature spiritually weak. Yeah? It seems like that. But it may be, in the Nectar of Devotion, it is described that when one takes up spiritual life, that generally speaking, it is a continuation of devotional service in a previous life. So one had already performed devotional service before and continues in this life. Generally speaking, it is rarely that someone just makes a first beginning and has no previous connection with devotional service. Although it may happen, and sometimes people don't have so much pious credit. Like Prabhupada said, I created your piety. So in this way, we came to devotional service. Anyway, the point is, so we have some strengths, maybe, from a previous life. But still, that's not enough. Piety is not enough to carry us. We have to always keep the iron in the fire. We always have to continue to remain active in devotional service, or we go down. That's what we're experiencing. And we lose our strength. So it is devotional service that is the source of strength. So we go to Balaram and we pray to Balaram for strength, for spiritual strength. And that means we're praying to Balaram for service. We do some service. Whatever we can do. Prabhupada said, the spiritual master should engage everyone's talents in the service of Krishna. Whatever they are good at. And that's how it is. Like our Bhakta Vatsala is good in controlling the children. Have you noticed? You know, it's like when you're together on a bus for a week, right? You get to know some qualities of everyone, you know. It starts to come out. Right? Yeah, it's like you get a little closer, you know. You see their particular natures. He could be a headmaster of a school, you know. Let's just take all the kids straight. You know? I see it in him, you know. So everyone has different qualities, and the spiritual master should see these qualities and engage people accordingly and give them a service according to their quality. So that service is natural and that everyone can do something they are good at. So in this way, we are praying to Lord Balaram for devotional service, and we assist him in the way he serves Krishna by serving Krishna in a personal way as a menial servant and by serving in Krishna's mission. I was explaining how most living beings in the spiritual world, and then Krishna is on a mission in the material world. He's on a mission to recapture all the living beings. And that's why he's performing his pastimes in Vrindavan. And that is why Vrindavan is here. Vrindavan is here for two reasons. One reason, to attract us to his pastimes, so to attract us to devotional service. And the other one is simply for devotees to relish. Once they are attracted, to relish and relish and relish. Swadu, swadu, pade, pade. Swadu, swadu, pade, pade means to relish, to constantly relish. Swadu, swadu, swadu. So we have come here for swadu. Swadu, swadu, pade, pade. To relish at every step. So now it's breakfast time has come. No, that's not breakfast time.
Breakfast.
That's just some devotees. We are on bring your own program. But meanwhile...